The Why Me Project, an exclusive presentation of Faith Strong Today.
Episode number
165, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct. Bing, bing. Insert bing, bing right here. Bing, bing. And it's great that we can talk. I mean, we talk athletes and artists and anybody and everybody. And the fact that we can go back to what we were listening to growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And there are artists who have had such a storied career. And the fact that we're able to talk to some of those artists is also very cool.
Yeah, and I also love that we're about the same age, because we can reflect on what, you know, different things were like when we were younger. And there's kind of that element of being able to see the growth and the changes is pretty cool.
So without further ado, I'd like to welcome our guest for this week, Mr. Douglas William Crum Jr., a.k.a. Plato, a.k.a. Mr. Illharmonic, a.k.a. a Deep Space Fiver. Crum, my friend, what's good?
I'm good.
We like to ask this skill testing question because we never know where it's going to go. Who are you and where did you come from?
who am I? I mean, you gave me the crazy intro, but... yeah, I'm an artist. I live in Dallas, Texas. I'm a producer, an MC, a dad. I don't know. Does that answer your question?
You were born and raised where?
I was born in Ohio, but I was raised in Texas. So that's where I've been at since I was a little kid. I'm glad we moved to Texas. I love Texas. I represent Texas proudly.
I was always told that, I mean, they consider Texas as God's country, and what I know about Texas is that it's big, it's hot, and football is well-loved. When you were in school, what type of student were you before you, you know, ended up graduating?
I was pretty mediocre, so like A's and B's typically, if that's what you mean, but beyond like grades and all that, just school for me was kind of wild, man. I've always been a weirdo. I was weird ever since I was a kid, so I never really fit in. Just kind of always did my own thing. It was awesome. It made for, you know, great childhood, because I didn't really get involved in some of the stuff other people were doing. Peer pressure has never really, like, done anything to me, so I always could just kind of do my own thing. At the same time, I couldn't wait to get out of school, man. So as soon as I graduated, I was out of that place.
What was the goal when you were getting out of school? Was it to pursue music, or was there something else that you had wanted to look into?
No, it was always music for me. It was always hip-hop. I never really, like, or at least I don't remember, like, making that, you know, decision and saying, like, this is what I'm going to do. But I always loved it. I was already doing music from the time I was, like, 12 is when I first started rapping. And then I was with a little, you know, my little homies in our town where we grew up. Started a little rap group. I think we put our first album out when I was like 14. So I had already been doing it for a while. I just kept doing it. I just was like, man, I love music. We were getting booked like every weekend. We were like traveling, and so it's, you know, it was kind of a natural thing for me to just keep doing it. But I went to college for music and video, so that I could just kind of keep an excuse to keep doing music. But, you know, I at least wanted to go to college, and I really didn't know anything about school. I just wanted to be able to keep doing music, but that's what I did.
Do you remember some of your first songs?
I don't remember any of that, but I do remember the first rap that I wrote, kind of, I think, is like, let me know I might have a shot at this, I guess. So I was in sixth grade, and we had to write a hit for like these sock puppets, and then we had to perform it in front of the class. And so for whatever reason, I just decided to make mine a rap. It was based off of Star Wars, but I called it Sock Wars. I think the first character to rap, I called him Cloth Vader, because he was the little sock guy. So anyway, I busted a rap. So I had a couple raps within the little skit, and then I remember afterwards the teachers were kind of tripping, and they didn't believe me that I wrote the rap. And so they were like asking for the lyrics, like, you need to show us so that you can prove that you wrote these. So I showed them, and I got a good grade, and I was like, man, everybody's kind of tripping. And to me, I was just like, you know, rapping. It wasn't that big of a deal, but the response was so good. I was like, man, maybe there's something to this. I'm going to keep doing this. And so I did.
What is it about rap? What is it about the genre? What is it about all of that that drew you to it?
Well, I think first, so I grew up in a really small town, like really, really small town. So even as hip hop was like, you know, getting really big, I was still pretty limited with my exposure to it just because it didn't really make it on the radio for me unless it was like some huge like hit. For me, when I heard it, it still sounded like new, and you could tell that it was like there was a culture that went with it to where it wasn't just like a style of music, but there was a whole lifestyle there. So all that seemed so cool to me. So I just, you know, and it, you know, to be honest, it felt a little bit rebellious. You know, it felt like a little edgy. It wasn't super safe, and so like, you know, as a kid, I think that's gonna draw you in. So it did for me. And then as I've gotten older, what's really cool about hip hop is I don't know if you guys experience this, but for me, like just as a white dude, I don't have like a huge history that I can look into as far as like my family and this cool culture that I'm really proud to embrace. You know, I don't really have that. So what's cool about hip hop is you automatically get to be part of this culture that you really didn't start. You know, you didn't have anything to do with, but now it can kind of become your culture. And so for somebody that grows up not really having a culture, I think that that's a cool side to it too, where you feel like you automatically have a kind of a new family. You know, if I talk to somebody and they tell me 5 hip hop albums that are their favorite, I'm going to be able to tell really quickly if I can get along with that person and if we have things in common, and you know what I mean? So to me, that was cool. And I didn't realize that, I think, until I became an adult, that, you know, that's maybe what drew me in. But I still live that. You know, hip hop is a culture. They always say hip hop is the way you live and rap is something you do.
We're all around the same age, so we grew up kind of around that same time. I mean, there was the East Coast thing, and there was the West Coast thing. And, I mean, you're growing up in Texas, which there really is no Texas thing. Were you going down to the local CD store to pick up albums? Because we didn't even have the internet.
Yeah. I mean, for sure. Like, what we used to do was there was eventually, like, the college, you know, radio station had, like, a hour-long hip-hop show on Saturday night. You just wait. You wait by the radio, and then once it starts, you know, you put your cassette in and you record the show.
Yes.
And then that's it. And then other than that, you know, I was able to get like the, you know, the really big stuff. So like the popular stuff was around. I remember once MC Hammer started to blow up, it was kind of like it was over at that point. Like hip hop was so big, MC Hammer was everywhere. So it started to get a little easier after that, but you know, I wasn't like an MC Hammer fan. I didn't like Vanilla Ice. Like, that stuff just wasn't my style.
Right.
But what I did really, really dig was DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince. I was really into that. And so those were, he blew up too. So that was pretty easily accessible on cassette.
Because, I mean, as a white guy, in a time where there's not a lot of white rappers, and then kind of as your career starts to blossom, I mean, there was the Beastie Boys, or, I mean, Eminem kind of became a thing. Were there artists that you were then looking up to that you wanted to mold your career by?
Not because they were white, or, you know, like that. I didn't really care about that, and a lot of the white dudes were corny anyway, you know what I mean? So I wasn't really... I didn't care. I do love the Beastie Boys. I think everybody loves the Beastie Boys. I don't know, man. I looked up to, gosh, I don't even know how old I was, but I was definitely in, like, junior highs. My grandma was a missionary, so she was, like, super hardcore Jesus, right, in a good way, and then also in sometimes a weird way. She was, like, really all over me with the type of music that I would listen to, and she was always in my mom's ear about, like, don't let them listen to this and that. So I had to be really careful with the hip hop that I would listen to. So I remember like recording over Christian cassette with hip hop so that my mom would think, you know, I was listening to Carmen and I was actually listening to something else. But during that time, Christian rap started to do its thing. I remember I didn't like a lot of it, but I really, really liked SFC. And that turned into, that was an MC named Soup the Chemist.
Yep.
Who kept making music after that. So I'd say, to answer your earlier question, if there's anybody that I would model anything off of from way back, Soup was like such a big influence on me. And then once I got signed, he was on the same label as me, which was insane to think like, dude, I was a kid listening to this guy, and now I'm label mates with him, and you know, I got his number, and we text each other, and like, what a crazy, crazy thing. But that dude, man, he I can't say enough good things about him. He's going to have a special place in heaven, man. That dude, he put so many people on and did so much for hip-hop and, like, just selfless, man, just selfless.
Was Christian hip-hop the goal, or was it more a mainstream kind of goal that you were looking for when you were younger?
I don't think I really thought of it like that as far as it, like, being a goal. Mm-hmm. Like, I just wanted to make music. I wanted to be able to travel the world doing music. So I remember when I was 18, I was able to, we got on a show called The Cut on MTV, which was like a...
Yeah.
like American Idol or something, you know? So like just yeah. When that happened, we started to get a lot of love really quick, you know, and get labels offering us deals. And sometimes people getting in trouble because you weren't supposed to be able to talk to anybody in the record industry while you were there on set. And, you know, people were coming into our green room and sliding us their card, and then they would get kicked out. And so we had all these different opportunities of places we could go. And that was the first time that I remember just kind of thinking about what we wanted to do. Like, everything is in front of us. What's the move? And I remember at that point, we definitely thought, in order for the music that we were making to be used by God, we had to sign with a Christian label. So after that, you know, remembering back when I was 18, like, man, what an idiot. Why did I think that? Like, it's such a narrow way to think. But at the time, that was the first time that I really thought that. And so we went that route, and we signed to Tooth & Nail, which they had they were just starting their hip-hop division called Up Rock. But that was the first time that I really did that, you know, and regardless of what you call it or what the goal was or whatever, I always want the music to be used by God, whatever you call that, whatever it is, Christian mainstream, I don't care these days. Mm-hmm. But the music sounds the same, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Let's talk about that faith side of things, because you said that grandma was a missionary. So then was faith always a big part of your life?
Yeah, from forever. You know, I grew up being dragged to the church, man. If the doors were open, my family was there in an annoying way. And I grew up in one of those, I don't know what you would call it these days. Like, maybe you would call it like a Pentecostal church, or maybe it was more like a full gospel, or, you know, that type of thing, whatever that means. They were very big on the Holy Spirit, everything, you know, laying hands on just, you know, you all the way live, just yeah. All the way live. So in that, there was a lot of times where there would be like, they would have revivals as well, you know what I mean? And so it'd be like, you never knew. I still don't know how they gauged like when a revival started and when it was over, because it wasn't like a scheduled, like, we're going to have a revival next week. It was like all of a sudden they'd be like, yo, we're in revival right now, so we're coming to church every single day until the revival is over. And so there would literally be points where it'd be like 2 weeks every day of the week we would be at church. Like, you know, it was kind of torture as a kid, but... man, it taught me so much and taught me to love the word and understand the word. And but yeah, I don't have one of those crazy, like, come to Jesus stories. I just always feel like I knew the Lord, and there was definitely points where I had to figure that out a little more, you know, and figure out, like, do I really have a relationship with God, or am I just doing this because this is how I was raised and I think this is the way you're supposed to do it, you know? So as I got older, I was able to kind of figure out that more on a personal level.
Yeah. Because, I mean, we're also talking in the time of, I mean, you said that, you know, a lot of that rap was corny. I remember listening to Christian hip hop and friends laughing at me because they, why would you listen to that? It's not very good. Do you see that it's getting a lot more respect?
I think so. I mean, to be honest with you, I don't follow it, like, you know, really closely, but I definitely see, like, Lecrae seems like he's smashing it. Andy Mineo seems like he's smashing it. All, you know, all those Reach records do seem like they're getting a lot of love, and I think that the music is quality music. I think those dudes are good rappers. Like, no disrespect to those dudes at all. Like I said, I think those dudes are awesome. I got those dudes back, like, 100%. But the weird thing about, like, you know, Christian music, in my opinion, and I know you guys know this, you guys are heavily involved in it, the thing that just never seems to go away, at least within the hip-hop side of things, there's always a weird, like, nobody wants to put out a Christian hip-hop record that's, like, unique and different and somebody doing their own thing. Everybody always is like, the Christian version of this, the Christian version of this. Yeah. And that, to me, has never gone away.
Mm-hmm.
And I get it, you know, I understand it, but it's a weird thing to notice, and you'll think, at this point. That wouldn't still be a thing, but I definitely hear it. And, you know, to be fair, that's beyond Christian music, too. You know, if somebody's, especially with hip-hop, if somebody's got a hit, then everybody wants their next song to sound like that song. So maybe that's more fair. Maybe it's just a thing that when somebody's successful, everybody's going to try and do what they're doing, I guess, at least within hip-hop, which I hate that.
I remember, too, kind of being that high school age, and it's like, oh, you like this artist? And there's this chart.
If you like this and you like
this.
With
yeah, with like arrows. Oh, you should check out the Christian column. It's this version of this. And it was definitely, an interesting phase when it came to Christian music and its growth. And it was a great exposure, too, though, taking a look at artists who sound the same but had faith-based lyrics. And I think for me, the lyrics is what's really key when it comes to the music. And we've seen you battle, so I'm kind of curious. Do you prefer to be on the stage battling or in the studio writing?
Man, I haven't battled in a minute. And I definitely... The only reason that I battled for me personally was just to help, like, get a name, you know, to help get your stuff out there. So I never wanted to be, like, a career battler or, you know, anything like that. It was just a way for people to hear about me and then hopefully check out the music. So once you get to the point where you kind of have that name, at that point, man, I hope I never have to battle again. I don't, it's like a real fight. Like, you feel it in your jaw. Like, you're like, yo, battling is like getting in a fight, man. It's crazy. You got to be strong mentally. I'd much rather be in the studio or on stage performing than battling. It's terrifying.
You have the solo career. Then how did Illharmonics come to be?
Well, Illharmonics was kind of the first thing. Like, that really was before I was doing anything solo-wise, if that's what you mean. Like, I came to college, you know, to go to school for music. But at that point, you know, I had left my little homies behind that I was in the little rap group with in high school because they didn't go to the same college as me. So at that point, I was kind of starting over, you know what I mean? And I came to a bigger city. Now I was in Dallas, which is like the huge city compared to where I grew up. So I met Blake, and then kind of fast forward to recording demos and stuff. And then that's when we got in on MTV. It was like right when we recorded our first demo. So right from the jump, man, I was in Illharmonics, and we were signed. So really, Illharmonics came first, and then we started making solo music.
And then Deep Space 5, then how did that come to fruition?
So Deep Space 5 was, I was already signed to Up Rock, you know, touring and, you know, traveling and stuff. You just start to meet other dudes. And I met Marzil, I met Manchild and DJ Dust in a group called Marzil. They're really, really dope. They had me on their album, so I flew to Atlanta to record on that album. And they were in a crew called Deep Space 5. So Deep Space 5 was like, everybody had their own group, and then everybody came together to do Deep Space 5 as like all these groups in one. So it was kind of like a collective of, you know, just like-minded dudes that love Jesus and were very authentic with their love for hip-hop and hip-hop culture. It wasn't normal to run into other dudes that loved the Lord and also loved hip-hop like we do.
Yeah.
Like, everybody was like battle MCs. Everybody kind of came up in the same type of way with hip-hop. So they asked me, the closer we got, we became homies, they asked me to be a part of Deep Space 5, and I was like, heck yeah, man, you guys are the dopest MCs I know. So I was able to kind of use my relationship at Up Rock to get a Deep Space 5 record deal to put out our first record with Up Rock. That's kind of how it's always been, man. You just put your homies on, right? So I was doing that way back in the day. And then from there, you know, Illharmonics didn't really work out. I started doing my solo stuff. I started getting a little bit more demand, I guess, for that side of things.
Yeah.
And so as that started to happen, we didn't, like, officially break up or anything. You know, I'm still super cool with Blake. But I think, you know, he just kind of saw, like, where it was going, and it just kind of made sense to let me do my thing. So I've been solo ever since, and then I'm still in Deep Space 5 as well. We don't put albums out very often, but still do sometimes. But, man, the Deep Space 5 stuff is, like, cult following. Like, people that like Deep Space 5 love Deep Space 5. So it's cool, man. It's cool to look back and connect with fans on some of those old albums and see what it meant to them.
Do you have a chance to, and I mean, you've had this career of 20-plus years, do you ever go back and listen to some of your old stuff and then see how things have changed over the years?
Yeah, for sure. For sure, for sure. Once once I had my son, I would find my parents when I wasn't around. My parents would, like, play him old stuff and be like, yo, check out your dad. Like, almost kind of like, not making fun of me, but kind of, you know what I mean? Like, yo, listen to what your dad used to do and play him old stuff. So, yeah, every now and then I'll go back and check something out, or somebody will say something. Like, even I had a song on my first solo album called Palm Sunday. And so every year, Palm Sunday, you know, fans start hitting me up on social media with Palm Sunday. Like, yo, Palm Sunday. And so, you know, every now I'll click that and be like, yo, man, this song came out in 2002. Crazy.
So you said you have your son, just one kid?
Yeah, just the one.
And how old's he now?
He's 25, and he has two kids of his own. No, I'm joking.
I was like, wow, well, I feel old.
I'm a grandfather. He's 16.
So then does he find dad cool? Like, does he use dad as clout when he goes out and he's like, do you know who my dad is?
Definitely not. Yeah. What's crazy is, like, you know, I think I've heard other rappers say the same thing, and it's pretty real. Like, I tell him how cool I am. He doesn't say I'm not cool, but he just, you know, he's just, like, real indifferent about it. Like, okay, because, you know, he sees me walking around the house with my shirt off, and, like, he sees the real me. You know what I mean? So, but every now and then, he'll get, like, a glimpse of something that means something to him. Like, to me, stuff is happening all the time. Like, we'll be in the grocery store, and somebody will stop me for an autograph or a picture or something, and then I've tried to use that, like, yo, man, isn't that crazy, your old man out here signing on it? And he's like, that's cool. But then one time we were at a Mavs game, and one of the commentators used to do a podcast back in the day, and it was like a hip-hop podcast. He had me on there, and, you know, we're cool. He's not like a super homie, but we at least are cordial. But he saw me at the game, and he left over his little box and came over to where I was at and just said, what's up, and told my son, yo, your dad's a dope MC. I don't know if you know. And then he went back to where he was at. And that, for whatever reason, was the time my kid looked at me like, yo, that's crazy. You know him? I'm like, bro, that dude, he's not even, what? You know who I know? Like, you know who I really know? You know, that's the stuff that means something to him for whatever reason. I mean, he loves the Mavericks, and so I guess that was a thing for him. But, yeah, he's not capitalizing on the clout that he could have, that's for sure.
And, I mean, we had a chance to talk with Toby a few years ago, and we were talking about him and how true it was wanting to come up and kind of find his own voice in his love of hip-hop. Has your son wanted to, you know, kind of follow in dad's footsteps, or does he want nothing to do with the music side of things?
He hasn't, like, adamantly said, like, I don't want anything to do with this, but he, you know, if I'm judging by his actions, he doesn't seem interested in the slightest, you know, so, which is cool, man. Like, you know, I think it'd be cool if he did, but obviously it's probably cooler that he doesn't, because that's a tough life, you know what I mean? So, but he loves music, you know, I think most people do, and he, I think it's cool to sit down when we have something in common and kind of talk about something new and, yo, have you heard this yet? Oh, man, I love the beat on this song. Or, you know, that's cool. I didn't see those conversations coming. Never thought I'd be able to have that kind of a talk with my kids.
I don't know about you, but having kids, for me at least, was a huge game changer. When it came for you and your music and your life, having a son, did it change the way you approached your music at all?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, even if, you know, there were certain times where I just had to make a decision to, like, not tour and just say, like, man, he's this age. I just think it would be better for however long, you know, I just need to be home, you know what I'm saying, and just not tour. And I've done that a few times throughout his life where I just felt like, I don't know, something about the age and, like, you know, he just needs his dad around, you know what I'm saying? So it affects that. And then yeah, for sure, you just start to think about, like, you know, what you're going to leave them and what you're passing down to them and what they see. And is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? You know, like, is he seeing good characteristics in me? And, you know, and then also, like, you know, just music, and especially, like, the Deep Space Five stuff, because all the Deep Space Five guys are dads, and I'm one of the youngest ones in the crew, so these guys have kids that are, like, you know, grown and married and the whole nine. So so we've always kind of, I've always had that. They were dads way before I was a dad, so I've always kind of been able to see, like, what it looks like to be a hip-hop dad. I think it's dope. I love it. I think I always tell everybody I'm rich. Take money, everything out of the equation. I'm rich. I'm a rich man. Hmm.
What I love is that, I mean, even all these years, as we fast forward from when you first started and your first solo release to even up until last year and Here's Mud in Your Eye, is there an excitement that you get going and, you know, doing studio stuff or writing new stuff or writing new beats? Do you get that excitement when it comes to new projects?
Yeah, big time. If I didn't, I would have quit a long time ago. Like, I don't, at this point, money is whatever. I mean, you know, we all need money, and I'm not dissing money, but I, you know, money is the last thing on my mind when it comes to me making art. So if it doesn't excite me, then I'm just not going to do it. So I just love creating. I love rapping. Like, it's, rapping is a weird thing. Sometimes it's like, if I've been on the road for a minute, or I've been making beats maybe, and I haven't necessarily been rapping or whatever I'm doing in the studio, once I like write a verse and rap it, you get such a happy feeling. It's the craziest thing in the world. Like, I don't know why rapping would be so joyful. Man, rapping is dope. So you write a good verse, you're happy with the writing, and then you lay it down, and yeah, that's the best feeling in the world. And then the worst feeling is just having it sit there, and, you know, you're mixing the record or whatever you're doing to it. You just want to put it out. I just want everybody to hear it right now, you know. So you got to wait in that time. But yeah, I get mad excited to put stuff out.
So, I mean, you released the album last year. Is there a goal in mind? Do you have a, I would like to accomplish this, or is it just to have people fall in love with what you're doing?
Well, I mean, it's crazy right now with everything that's going on, because it kind of makes you look at things differently, right? So for the longest, I just wanted to be able to put music out, and then I just wanted to be able to tour the world, performing that music, getting to meet the people that like it, meet new people, whatever, you know, just the whole touring, everything. To me, like, there's a lot of fruit that comes out of that side of things. So now that's gone.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, so, you know, what do you want out of it? You know what I mean? And so I want, at the end of the day, at least what I'm on right now, and what I pray for as I'm going into the studio and working is I want to create beautiful art that represents the creator. I mean, he's the most creative one. I pray that he just breaks me off with a chunk of his creativity, you know, to where I can make some dope art, something that's beautiful, something that's not going to be a trendy flash in the pan type thing, but something that's going to last as good art, and hopefully reflects him and shines with whatever it is that he wants to put in that piece of music, you know, because it'll be different song by song. But yeah, that's my goal. And then I hope that it blesses people. You know, I want it to bless the Lord, but I want it to bless people. And whatever he wants to do with that, I don't want to call that beforehand. But I just hope that it gets used in some way to where it moves past the 3.5-minute song and there's some eternity involved at some point in there. So that would be success for me.
Being a little, I guess, stuck at home thanks to COVID-19, have you found yourself writing more?
So, man, it hit at a really weird time for me, to where I pretty much was, like, wrapping up a new album. So, mm-hmm. At this point, I've been doing, like, the kind of the not-so-creative side of it, which stinks. But so mixing and kind of, you know, wrapping up some of the interludes and adding a little bit more instrumentation and stuff. But the writing has pretty much been over. But I've been trying to write other ways. Like, I always want to be a better writer, because I think that'll just translate into song making anyway. So I definitely am writing. I wouldn't say I'm writing for like something specific, but I'm definitely trying to keep that muscle flexing, you know.
Do you find that, because I mean, when you started your career, I mean, as we, like, the internet wasn't a real big thing. Do you find that now the social media side of things, is it more helpful for an artist, because you're able to then, hey, this is a new single, what do you think of this? You're able to kind of get that immediate feedback?
Yeah, for sure. For sure, for sure. I think, you know, it can go both ways. Social media can be a horrible thing if you're not mindful with it, you know. But yeah, if you use it like a tool like that, and that's a super dope way to do it. And then even beyond social media, just, you know, with the internet being what it is, and, you know, I have however many people that I have on my email list, you know, that have subscribed, that's direct right to people, you know, and people that have already expressed an interest in what I do, to where they signed up for my email list. So, you know, that didn't exist back in the day, but that's dope. I much prefer that to social media. Social media is cool, but social media also feels a little bit like, you know, who's trying to flex the most? Like, who I'm trying to look cool on social media, and like, that feels so empty sometimes. But you know, an email blast with it's just the music link, or it's just the video, or whatever it is, that's cooler to me. Social media is like, I just got to be careful with it, man. It'll go to your head, drive you insane.
As you reflect over your life, some of those ups and down kind of moments, can you think of any why me moments that have happened to you?
I started thinking about this earlier whenever we were talking about how I grew up. And the church that I grew up in could have been, and honestly, it was a little bit dangerous for me at points. It was like I guess there's a term for it, like spiritual abuse or something like that. So where like you don't question the authority. The pastor is the this, and the pastor does whatever they want to do. And like it kind of got weird a little bit, to where when I left and I went to college, that was the first moment for me that was like, okay, nobody knows who I am. I can do anything I want, you know, and nobody knows anything, right? So I did that a little bit, you know, and I started getting a little bit wild. And then, you know, I came back and kind of reeled it in a little bit. But what's cool for me as far as like being life-changing, it's kind of what I spoke on a little bit earlier. That's like the first time in my life when I realized you can't make decisions, even if they're spiritual decisions or moral decisions or whatever. You can't make those decisions based on the people that are watching you and people that see you. Because then even if you do the right thing, you're doing it for the wrong reason. You know what I mean? And so that was when I kind of learned the importance of having my own personal relationship with the Lord, that it doesn't have to be my mom or my youth pastor or whoever it is, but like I can actually know him, and he's the one that sees me when nobody sees me, you know what I mean? And that for me it changed my whole life. So I'm grateful for how I grew up, if for nothing more than I could have that moment, because it shaped everything. I mean, I talk a little bit about it on the Here's Mud in Your Eye album. Like I've toured the world with homies, and I have a lot of my friends who have lost faith, and you know, they don't believe in God, or they believe in a different type of thing or whatever it is, but they really aren't living it out anymore. And so a lot of times that comes because they see you start to see behind the curtain a little bit, especially if you're going to churches and you're playing shows in churches, or you're doing a lot of stuff that's like faith-based, like start to see this ugly side, you know, that's the business side of it that's working with, like still about money and these things. And on the surface, it's like, oh, it's ministry, it's for the Lord. And then once you see like certain things of what it really is, it's gross, you know? And then beyond that, even just people are people. And, you know, I'm sure you guys have heard, like, I mean, one of the main reasons that somebody doesn't want to go to church or they don't believe in God is the first thing they'll say is like, man, it's a bunch of hypocrites. Yeah. I don't want anything to do with that. Mm-hmm. And that's real, right? And so because of the way that I grew up, because I had that experience, it enabled me to kind of realize I'm a knucklehead too. You know what I mean? And I do stupid stuff. And so it's helped me to not lose faith in who God is, based on humans and what people do. And people were supposed to reflect God, but we rarely do. You know what I mean? So you can't base who God is based on what the church or his people are doing. And so that's a lesson that I have to keep learning all the time. So that was a pretty pivotal point for me.
With that said, though, I mean, we are human. And I mean, you are exposed in a completely different level, but how do you keep yourself grounded? How do you keep yourself level? Because you've now looked on the other side of the curtain and you've kind of seen the industry. You've kind of seen in some ways how churches are, not for face value, but you've got to kind of, you know, you've got the backstage pass, if you will.
You got to have like your own personal relationship with God. I mean, I think that's something that you can't really answer across the board. That has to be something individual. And that's what I was saying too. Some people, it made them leave. Some people were like, nope, I can't do this. You know what I mean? And so for me, God has been so good to me, man. I wish there really isn't a better answer than that. Like, I don't know. God is good. I try to talk to him. He leads me. And man, I'm grateful for that, because I don't know what I would do.
Do you have other people that you're able to have keep you grounded, those relationships?
I wish I did, man. I really don't, if I'm being honest. Like, I definitely have, you know, some of the homies in Deep Space 5 and stuff, but those dudes, like, we don't really have to have those types of talk, because we kind of know where we're at on that stuff, you know what I mean? And so if I ever needed to vent or something like that, you know, I can always hit those dudes up. But, like, as far as, like, I don't know, industry talks and stuff, like, I don't really have those conversations, man. Because to be honest with you, it's kind of what I was saying earlier, too. Like, I really don't care. Like, you can label it something, you cannot label it something. The beauty of me being an independent artist is I don't have to do that. Like, I can just make the music I want to make and then worry about what people want to call it or whatever later. So I don't care about that. There's no rules for me at this point. I just want to make beautiful art, and I don't know, that kind of keeps me grounded, I guess, making the music and putting it out, talking to fans.
So then is indie life better than being signed?
You know, it goes both ways. I think the peace of mind, I think, is. But I still, you know, I'll mess with a label on one album, and then on my next album I'll do it independently, and I'll kind of keep, you know, bouncing around back and forth. Just the easiest answer, like, you know, just to ABC it, is like indie. Like, if I put something out myself, I have to put all the money into it, right? Yeah. So I put all the upfront money, everything that has to happen. But the awesome thing is I make all that money back, and I don't have to split it with anybody, right? So, I mean, it's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
The downside to the label is that, well, the upside is you're using their money, so that's awesome, so you don't have any money up front. The downside is you're not going to make anything on the back end because it's going to get split into such a small pie. That, like, you're not going to really make anything on the back end. So, but that's what I was saying. If you're not doing it for money, then it's like, it's really dope to just do it independently. It's a lot of work, man. It's a lot of work, but it's cool. It feels, you know, you're like an entrepreneur, man. I feel like Puff Daddy. I put an album out and sell all your merch, and, you know, everything sold out. And you're like, man, look at this. I'm like a store.
This is completely off topic, but I have to ask this question because you'd mentioned your grandma earlier on. Did she ever end up listening to your music, and did you ever get her approval?
Yeah. My grandma's down for me. I put an album out called Bare Knuckle Gospel in, I think, 2016, and it had a song called Grandma's Prayer. And so I basically just kind of told a little story about my grandma and how she's praying for me, and, you know, she's holding me down. And so I had my family, you know, she's still alive. She's, but she lives with the rest of my family. So I'm the only one that lives in Dallas. So I hit my sisters up like, yo, make sure you play this song for her. Make sure that she checks it out. And they were like, okay. So they did it. They said, you know, she liked it and smiled. But she immediately after the song was over was like, is there any way that you can get him to get me the lyrics? Because I can't understand it.
I love that.
You know, musically, you can hear your heart. Now, personally, we can hear it as well. You are authentically you. We know that you love music and love Jesus. Here's Mud in Your Eyes out now. IamCrumb.com, at CrumbOfficial on Insta. IamCrumb on Twitter. Brother, we appreciate you taking some time and sharing your heart.
Yeah, man. It's my pleasure, bro. Thanks for talking to me and hitting me up.
It's always great when you're able to see where someone comes from and you see their passion and their heart and how this was a dream that I had and now I'm fulfilling and living out that dream.
Yeah, and it's really cool being able to see then how that dream has encouraged and inspired so many other people.
Yeah, we're talking about making a difference each and every day. We're given this opportunity, holding open a door, buying a coffee for someone, creating song or whatever that may be,
mm-hmm.
whatever's put on your heart. We would just encourage you to continue that passion and do what God has put on your heart to do.
Absolutely.
Just a reminder, as we cross the T's and dot the I's, that you could download on places like Apple Podcasts. You could check out Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud. We would encourage you to tell a friend when it comes to the Why Me Project podcast, because without you and the 5-star reviews and that, this thing won't grow.
So help spread the word. It's much appreciated. You can also head to faithstrongtoday.com for more.